Well, Betty Robbins sent me an article. It's called, Is Hell Dead? And I don't know if you're familiar with, it's dead and it went to judgment and it got sent to hell. No, I haven't done that. And it's an article about evangelical preacher Rob Bell, who was part of the whole evangelical movement that was to the right and you're well aware of. And he came to the conclusion one day that maybe, as he understood his God, maybe God loves everybody, and somehow maybe this loving God would provide a pathway for people to get to heaven and everybody could have eternal life. And so as he's working out his theology, as he's working out his own understanding of the world and worldview, and he was a rising star in the evangelical world. You know, it must have crushed him. He had 7,000 people in his church. He's writing bestsellers, and he's just a popular guy. Because, say, if I, an evangelical, would have written that, it would get no attention at all. Right? But this guy, he's getting attention. And so he wrote a book pondering these thoughts. And the evangelical world is in a state of crisis. One of their own has expressing the full love of God toward everybody. So now they're in a crisis. And what? And you know, the president of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary is going, oh, this is disastrous. And one of his old friends wrote him and said, oh, you're done. You know, this is it. You're out of the group and you're no longer part of us. And as many of you in your own spiritual and religious pilgrimage may have experienced that kind of rejection for working out your own theology or understanding of life. Two things about this that really struck me. One is, I am so glad to be a Unitarian Universalist, because I can wrestle with my understanding of the world, my understanding of God, or not my understanding of God. I can wrestle with sacred text, and I can change from this week to that week to this week and work on that and not fear being rejected or not fear being cast out. I don't have that fear. I can wrestle. As a matter of fact, I can even from the pulpit say, I'm really wrestling with this idea. Last week I was thinking about this and I read this, and this week I'm struggling with this. And if I come to this conclusion, it changes my perception of seven principles, and it's okay. I'm free to wrestle with my belief system. I'm free to let go of belief system and have no belief systems, which we'll get to in a minute. I'm free in my community without fear of being rejected. The other thing that struck me about this article, and it's in Time magazine, and get it on the internet if that's what you have, it sounds very much like the struggle for universalism in the 1820s and our heritage. And Jose Ballou and the universalists in our faith tradition. If I'm reading that and I'm going, this sounds familiar. But then I'm wondering, wait a minute, is that because we have so receded into the background, we've created space for other people to have that struggle? Is it because, or another reason? So I hope it's not that. But it is interesting to see how history and people move about and change their thinking. So I wish this new universalist well. And I hope he wins many converts to universalism. I don't know what he'll do when he starts wrestling with monotheism and Unitarianism and Trinitarianism. That would cause another disaster, I suppose. We have been recently talking about conventional truth and ultimate truth from the Buddhist perspective. Now you might say, what does that to do with Easter? And what does that to do with the newness of life? And what does that have to do with human beings celebrating the coming of the fullness of creation, coming in the fullness of the flowering of plants, animals, and life, and coming from the seemingly death of winter to the life of spring. And I'm going to say it's, in a way, central to that conversation. And if you remember, conventional truth were belief systems that people were inside the belief systems, and they adhered to those belief systems and didn't consider other belief systems. The conventional truth. I was talking to my daughter-in-law, and she was saying that, well, the way I see it, if you're born over here and you're a Buddhist, and you're born over here and you're a Hindu, and you're born over here and you're a Christian, and you never hear of these different stories, how can one be against you or judge against you? There's just all these different beliefs. And as she was doing it, and since I've been thinking in terms of conventional belief, truth, and ultimate truth, I thought she's describing it beautifully. You have these pockets of beliefs all around the world, and they're what's called conventional beliefs. And sometimes we get locked in to those conventional beliefs. And I think that's kind of clear, but I think the ultimate truth, as the Buddhist perspective brought it about, or the Christian perspective, which is the unconditioned, is a little more difficult to grasp, because in order to grasp it, especially in the Buddhist teaching, you have to experience it. And you have to, and to experience it, you have to go through certain practices and certain spiritual practices to get there. And so it's a little more difficult to get to. And as we think about that ultimate truth of being able to let go of conventional truths, being able to stand back and look at them and not to have any beliefs yourself for a moment in time, that's a difficult thing to do. And I got to thinking about Easter and the resurrection and how that means new life and how that's related to salvation, and how is it that we've gotten so far from, and Bill brought it up this morning, how is it we've gotten so far from saying that we're a caring, loving people, but when we look at the newspaper and when we see what's happening in our world, we don't see that. And yet our nation celebrates, and apparently causing traffic jams in some areas down the street, celebrates a viewpoint of love, and at the same time, we see seemingly uncaring aspects of our culture as legislation and laws gets put forth and so forth. And I thought, you know, that is really odd, because there was a time when salvation meant, in the Christian church, salvation meant healing. You couldn't separate healing and salvation. And if you look at the New Testament and look at the language and the Greek language, the words are sometimes translated either way. And I was thinking about, well, how about our healthcare system? We're big on Easter and salvation, but we've so separated healing, we're not putting those together, and they're not coming out together. And so I'm wondering, how is it that we can have healing as part of our religious experience, and part of the salvation experience, and part of the resurrection experience, and how do we do that? Coming across with the idea of conventional truth and ultimate truth. And it was about 20 years ago when I was studying and we had to integrate theology and psychology, it came to me that as I was participating in communion, one of the highest religious practices, one of the highest religious rituals in the Christian faith, communion, where the Spirit of God and the person merges, and there ought to be a sense of healing and wholeness and being complete, that in that act, I could go take communion, but yet there's no healing in my history. I could go take communion and feel better and feel like I belong, but yet there's no healing. And I've talked to many people who would take communion, but the effects of, in my case, when my parents divorced when I was 10, that wasn't affected by communion, nor was there any mechanism in the church to deal with that unresolved grief. When people are affected by any type of childhood injury, we can go experience this high religious communion, but we're not healed. What's going on inside of us isn't brought forth. And so I'm in this study, I'm trying to say that doesn't make any sense to me. In our highest religious practices, our whole being needs to be brought forth for healing. All of who we are as humans needs to be brought forth. And then when I was thinking about this sermon and Easter and conventional truth and ultimate truth, in the conventional truth system, it's not possible to have that pure, deep healing. Because that pure, deep healing would move you beyond that belief structure, beyond that conventional truth system. It would move you past it. The healthiest Christianity would move you past Christianity, if that makes any sense. The healthiest Buddhism, if you ever read, I think it was Sheldon, if you meet Buddha on the road, kill him. That's what we're talking about. Because if you have this belief structure, or you have this mentor, or you have this guru, or you have this person who's and you're encased in that mindset, then in a way you're captured. You're not free. So how do we look at ourselves and think about ourselves as religious people, and at the same time know that we're working out of the religious beliefs that we have? How do I move in the direction of living in the light? Of moving past the conventional truth that I'm captured by? Does indeed resurrection apply to me? Or am I involved in a system that affirms the old way of life and somehow I'm satisfied with it? If I take as a Unitarian Universalist and I'm thinking no to supernatural stuff, how am I to make sense out of resurrection? How am I to make sense out of newness of life? How am I going to say that those parts of who I am from my history that have died, that have been put away, the dreams that I once had that I will no longer try to achieve because of where I'm at in my life, the gifts that I have that I've tried to actualize and potentialize, I find no place for those gifts to be exercised in this world, and I've accepted that to be the way it's going to be, that this world is not for that expression of myself. How many of us have been in love and have been in hurt and made the decision that that kind of love is not available for me in this life? So I guess I'm just going to live that life. How many of us have said, I really wish I could go to college and potentialize these gifts, and said, but that's not going to be for me in this life? How many of us have been in relationships and said, this is the way it is for me, and that's just the way it's going to be? How many of us have stepped back from life and said, I'm going to take my second and third choice in life and not my first choice in life because this world is not for me? Are there places inside of us that know death and we've said okay to that? That's the way it's going to be. Well, in ultimate truth, in moving past conventional truths, we let those go, and somehow in our imaginations, I don't know how you might work this for yourselves, but there's a purification process. And if you read spiritual traditions, you often hear that there's a fire purging. And can you imagine yourself right now, even, that there is this fire that you know in your heart will not harm your purest self? You know that. Can you see yourself walking into that fire and just staying there and just being there? and allowing that fire in the saints to purify. Now, it might be easier for some of you to see yourself diving in a cool pool of water, seeing things wash away. That might be better. But if we're going to bring ourselves in a religious way to a sense to talk about Easter, to talk about the newness of life, and to experience the resurrection of life, how do we bring it? I started thinking that, you know, in a way, the flowers unfold, the trees unfold every year, and they're not blocked. But sometimes I live blocked. So how do I do that? And then once I do that, how do I stand there, stand for that moment in time? No ego. Aware, not aware. Aware of my breathing, not aware of my breathing. Kind of lost in myself, found in my, kind of just being there, breathing, and having the courage to know that when a thought comes, or when a sense of anxiety comes, or when I've got to go do this tomorrow, no, I've got to get up and do this in an hour. No, I've got to do this. Knowing that organizing myself so that when that comes to me, I can breathe and let that go. And I gain enough concentration and control within myself so that when I'm in that place of purification, I can calm that down. And that I'm in a community that if I find myself working on this practice, that when I'm in a community and I get overtaken, say. I don't know if you've ever been overtaken by a thought you can't get rid of. Or if you've ever caught yourself doing behaviors you don't want to be doing. You're kind of overtaken. That I'm in a community where there's somebody I can talk to about that. I can say, hey, this is a problem that I have to resolve that so I can practice this place and being in this place of breathing. Aware and not aware. Aware and not aware. And it is at this point that I don't know if it's the most joyful or the most awareness of suffering. It can be any. But when I come back to the world and have to walk in the world again, I think I begin to notice with greater clarity what Bill was pointing out, that I live in a land. Well, just to reveal my biases, I do believe that if we implemented the seven principles of Unitarian Universalism, we'd have a kinder society. I do believe that. But now, not only do I believe that, when I practice the spiritual exercise of the newness of spring and of Easter, when I practice that, when I step back in to become more aware and I see the patterns, I become more aware of how we are not maybe such a kind society. When that happens, the danger is I get attached to that. I get lost in that. I get compulsive, as I have been told periodically. I can get compulsive about the nature of corporations. Or I can get compulsive about the nature of this. Or I can get compulsive about, say, a sports team. Or so much so, I get attached to the idea of where I see the suffering or what I see that needs to be fixed. Then I get so attached to that 10 years go by and that's the only thing that I know. I've lost my life in that attachment and in that suffering. So I have to practice to go back and forth, to let go. And can we as a people practice that? Can we build a community where this becomes the norm of our spirituality, that newness and freshness of existence and of breath is who we become and who we are? So that when we speak of the world, we're direct, we're clear, we have clarity, we understand how things affect people, and we can address that with some sense. Not when I get compulsive and I'm yelling and screaming, and, which I'm apt to do. I suspect, for an example maybe to bring it home to some, that we could do an experiment and I could put you in front of a television with Fox News on and I could watch you get attached in a negative way to something that's being said. That's how vulnerable we are. See, you already figured out how to protect yourself. But in a way, I guess that would be a way to test ourselves. Watch the things that we don't like that I'm attached. And how long am I attached there? How many images in my mind can I call up at any given time that I can get lost in that image in a negative way, which causes myself suffering? I can remember coming to the conclusion about myself and others as a counselor that the first thing that happens when I get angry is not just the attachment, but it does harm to myself. My blood pressure goes up, my heart beats faster, and, you know, I remove myself from a good quality of life because I'm attached to something. So as we look at this spring and Easter and think, are we, as in the, I think, early Christianity and in Buddhism and in other faith traditions, am I willing to bring those faith traditions into myself and practice that process in which I move to a place where I'm aware, not aware, where I can breathe deeply and let things go so that when I re-engage the world, which we do after event, after experiences like that, that I can maintain, and this is the most, I think, one of the most difficult things to do. It's not easy necessarily to find that spot, to carve out that place for you in your life, whether it's in your house or in the woods, wherever that might be, and you actually take the time to find that for yourself and to build that place for yourself, kind of in a way your own temple. When you do that, that's difficult enough. However, how do you maintain that breath when you step back into the world so that as you walk through the world, read newspapers, watch television, whatever it is, engage one another, whatever it is you do, you bring some of this with you? That's the difference between living in a conventional truth system and living in an ultimate truth place. And I say conventional truth system and ultimate truth place on purpose, and I make that distinction because in conventional truth place you are affirming beliefs. From this place, you are a way of life. You don't talk about it. You don't evangelize people. You don't coerce people. You don't try to influence people necessarily logically, although it's hard for some terms not to, but no. What you do is you move into the world and you are the way you want to be. And you are the way others will experience you and that will have an influence on others. So as we are peace, as we practice peace as a way of being, that influences the world. And that's how we do it, wherever we walk. But this transition from that quiet, meditative, wonderful place that we find ourselves of being able to be that as we move through the world in relationship with one another and as we speak and address and go to the different places that we go to, then we have an opportunity to really bring about transformation. I guess in a way, then we become spring ourselves. We become the Easter event
We become, if you read some of the theologians, H. Richard Niebuhr, he talks about in his view of Christianity, it's a permanent revolution. It's just perpetually in motion. There is no stagnant, there is no bleed, you're just always in motion, letting things go and engaging. So on this Easter, and in this room, know this to be true. There is newness here. And it is good to be here.